Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing, IG, at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Here's what we got going today. NBA playoff preview. Our guy Raheem is back. We're doing another installment of Rostradamus Returns. We're going to talk playoff gambling strategy. Doing a cash or trash today, and we will end it with another rendition of Storytime with Raheem. By the way, here's all I know about this story. Ra texted me Saturday night. It was two texts back to back, actually. The first one, did I tell the story about my car on your show before? Second one, how my car got blown up at the casino, he asks. And that is one of the many, many reasons why I love it when Raheem comes on the show. Here he is, my friend and yours, from the Action Network, the one and only Raheem Palm. Ra, happy playoffs. Welcome back, my man.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be back. I'm excited. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Actually, I think I'm even more excited than usual for these playoffs, and here's why. The Suns are the favorites to win it all. They're at plus 270 right now on BetMGM. I've seen plus 270 elsewhere, too. The last time we had a favorite with longer odds than that at the start of the playoffs, it's been more than a decade. According to the website Sports Odds History, you have to go back to the 2010-2011 season. That's when the Dirk Mavs won it all, heading into the playoffs. So the same, you know, point that we're at right now in this season, the Lakers were the favorites to win it all. They were plus 275. So that's Kobe, Powell, Lamar, Andrew Bynum was on that team. And every year since, it's been a team with shorter odds. So a couple examples, 12-13, it was one of those Heat years. They were minus 125. 18-19, Warriors were minus 178. Now you got the Suns plus 270. Here's my point, Raheem. And tell me if I'm wrong about this. I want to know what you think about it. Doesn't the lack of a clear-cut favorite this season work in our favor when it comes to making a few bucks, betting whatever, between now and the end of the finals in June?
I think it works in our favor in the sense that you have a chance of getting those longer odds payouts. And look, you look at the Milwaukee Bucks right now, they're plus 500. The Celtics, they're plus 700. The Brooklyn Nets are plus 850. The Warriors are plus 900. Even the Philadelphia 76ers with James Harden are plus 1400. So you can put yourself in a position to aim for a higher payout and even hedge out later. So I do like the fact that there's no Warriors, there's no Cavs to where you know for sure who's going to be going to the NBA Finals.
All right, what better way to get into Rostradamus Returns? This is a hit. This is a hit last time.
Okay, so we were just talking about the NBA Finals. I'm going to – look, I think you have to kind of grab the Suns plus 270.
Hold on. Let me explain it. You're so excited. You're jumping ahead. really quick, just in case people didn't hear this last time we did it, Ra also sometimes goes by Rostradamus. It's part of his Twitter handle. And so I was like, hey, what if we do this segment? I'm going to call it Rostradamus Returns because you come on the pod a lot, and really simple – long track record, Raheem, of nailing predictions on this pod, in particular with the NBA, frankly. And basically, I say, hey, come in ready to go with a few predictions, Rostradamus, and we're going to give you a little cheesy sound effect that we only use with you, and take it from there. So without further ado, today, I think we're going through three of them. I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go. Let's get it going. Rostradamus Returns. Prediction number one is...
we're going to go with the Suns plus 270 to win the NBA title. When you look at their path, they have the easiest path out of everybody. And I know we're a little bit late to the party on this. I think we might have given it out before, but it's never too late to be able to get the best team who's 64-18 on the year at plus money to win the NBA title. And it's so funny because you just mentioned in our last segment that the fact that there's no clear-cut team, and I think the Suns might be the clear-cut team to win the West. The only team I see out West that's going to give them some issues is the Golden State Warriors, and they might not face them into the Western Conference Finals. They're going to be facing a play-in team, whether that be the Clippers, the Pelicans, or the Spurs. They should be able to beat up on them. And round two, you got either the Mavericks or the Jazz, and the team that I actually liked in that matchup between the Mavericks and the Jazz was the Dallas Mavericks, but Luka Doncic just suffered a calf injury, which is the same injury I suffered. I've been dealing with a calf injury. I suffered it back in February, and I'm still not 100%. So I think you kind of have to rule out the Mavericks right now. And the way the Jazz have been playing, I expect the Suns to sweep them. So that makes their path even easier. So grab the plus 270 on the Suns.
And tell me what you think of this one, Ra. You know, Chris Paul, he's a player who has had some injury issues, in particular late in seasons and also in the playoffs. So I think the main example of that was what I think it was 18-19. He's on the Rockets playing the Warriors, looking like they could take him down, but then he gets injured. He sits out, game 6 and 7 of that series, and Rockets end up losing. There was that game where they like missed something, like 30 three-pointers, what have you. I'm wondering if his injury late in the season this year may actually help him out. I think he missed 15 games. Is there any chance that he could be more rested now than he typically is going into the playoffs?
You know, we're on the same page today, and that's the exact same thing that I said when the injury first happened. And because it also wasn't like a leg injury, it wasn't an injury that kept him out of the gym, so he wasn't out of shape. He had a hand injury. So I think that was a blessing in disguise, and it also allowed for other guys to step up and be able to perform without Chris Paul. So I think the Suns are even in a better position right now.
Rostradamus, let's do these next two predictions together because mm-hmm. they're related. You want to give us both and explain what you like about them?
Okay, I like the Bucks. Look, when you look at the Bucks right now, they're playing the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls are in a total tailspin right now. They're going to be facing – I mean, look, the Bucks are 10-point favorites in game one, and they've dominated this Bulls team. You want to take a guess the last time the Bulls beat the Bucks with Giannis?
I'm going to say it's been a while.
2017 in December. The Bucks have won 16 out of the last 17 games against the Chicago Bulls. The only time the Bulls have beaten them was on the last day of the regular season last year, and the Bucks missed their starters. Now, I know this is a different Bulls team. They got DeRozan in conjunction with LaVine. But this team is really struggling right now. They're not going to have Lonzo Ball. They're banged up. And I just think that the Bucks really just have them in a bad spot. So my prediction for this is I'm going to go with the Bucks 4-0 sweep over the Bulls plus 250. But I also like the Bucks. You can lay the juice on this. -2.5 games against the Bulls. I think you have to lay 170, 180, 190. But if the Bulls win two games, obviously you lose your bet. But I don't see them losing two. I don't see the Bulls winning two games. And you're also in a good position with this because the Bucks are laying 10 at home. They're probably going to be laying around 6 in the road games. So you can hedge in game if you feel like the Bucks are going to lose one of these games. I would put more on the Bucks at -2.5 against the Bulls and a little bit less on the Bulls for the sweep. But I really like that one. Actually, I want to come back to a prediction. I didn't tell you this before. I want to come back to a prediction that I actually made on the last one.
Let's do it. Go for it. Yeah, take it away.
I said the Grizzlies might be like a first-round exit, but I think you got to kind of cancel that just based on their matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I do think that's going to be a tough matchup. I expect that to be a series to where the Wolves should be able to pick up a couple games at home, but the Grizzlies have a real shot at making the Western Conference Finals.
Okay. All right. Very good. Pulling it back. Even Rostradamus makes corrections. Speaking of, by the way, Rostradamus, you had talked about potentially throwing one out dealing with Philly-Toronto, but I gather that is no longer the case. What's going on there?
Okay. So when I look at this series, look, the Philadelphia 76ers, I just wrote an article on them about how they have some issues. James Harden doesn't appear to be the same guy. And we all know the issues with Glenn Rivers as a head coach. But the Toronto Raptors are a little bit overmatched. And I think the Sixers can overwhelm them with talent. So I expect them to win game one. I really like the Sixers late at 4.5, 5 for game one. If you look at the Raptors, they've been in the playoffs 12 times since 1995. They've lost game one 11 out of those 12 times. The only time they've actually won game one was in the bubble against the Brooklyn Nets, who didn't have Kyrie. They didn't have Kevin Durant. So I expect the Sixers to win game one. And one of the things I want to do with this series, I think you guys should look at, is that play the Sixers early in this series. Sixers should be able to jump out to a lead 1-0, 2-0. But as the series goes on, the Raptors can still win these games. I think the Raptors then become live, because I think that's where you'll see the coaching mismatch add up. You'll see Nick Nurse be able to make adjustments as the series goes on. Like, Doc Rivers tends to have leads in these series, but he struggles when it comes to making adjustments, and he's blown more 3-1 and 3-2 leads than any other coach in the history of this league. So I'm going to be playing the Sixers early, but as the series goes on, I'm going to be playing the Raptors.
Last week in a tweet about James Harden, and by the way, producer Parrish in the background, I think you're going to like this one. You wrote, "Dude is Larry Holmes status." I don't know if that's a raw original, but I thought it was really good. Explain to me what Larry Holmes status is, and why does Harden qualify?
Okay, so Tupac, back in 1996, we all know Tupac was he was friends with Mike Tyson and a huge fan of Mike Tyson. So he had a line saying, "You old rappers looking like Larry Holmes, flabby and sick." And I know you guys, some of the younger guys might not remember, Mike Tyson beat up an older Larry Holmes. We all know Larry Holmes is probably one of the greatest heavyweight champions ever. But when he stepped into the ring with the young, up-and-coming Mike Tyson, he got knocked out. So when you say somebody is Larry Holmes status, that's basically saying that you're old and you're washed up and you're past your prime. And I think James Harden right now, when you look at James Harden right now, he's really struggling to beat a switch. When he was with the Houston Rockets, this is a guy who was averaging 33, 34, 35 points per game, and he made a living switching on bigs. So if you put a big in front of him in a pick and roll, it was almost automatic two points. Right now, you put a big on him, and he's struggling to blow past him. He doesn't have the same burst as far as his hamstring and getting to the rim, and he's not hitting his step back three at the same percentage. You look at he's played 21 games with the Sixers. He shot under 30% from the field in like 12 of them. So when I say James Harden is Larry Holmes status, it just means he's at the tail end of his prime.
You think that could have something to do with injuries or just conditioning? I guess what I'm trying to ask you here is, do you think there's any chance that we see the old James Harden maybe next season after a productive offseason?
I'm going to be honest, James Harden's had a huge load. Like, he shouldered a huge, huge load in Houston. And I mean, this was a guy who, I mean, he played every single night. Every single night. I mean, he was a guy who was averaging 30 plus points, 10 assists, 8 rebounds. And he's doing it every single night consistently. And this is also a guy who likes to party. I mean, he's not a vegan. He's not necessarily taking care of himself in that manner. So, with that huge load, and then you suffer a hamstring injury. And I never really felt like he was the same guy since last year. Because he's playing at MVP level in Brooklyn last year. He suffered a hamstring injury, hasn't been the same since. So I think the days of James Harden being the guy that he once was are over unless he makes some drastic changes. I mean, and that's possible. I mean, we saw Chris Paul, he struggled a little bit his last season in Houston. He actually cut the meat out of his diet, changed his diet. He slimmed up. And it's like Chris Paul's a resurgence. So I think James Harden's going to have to take a long, hard look at himself and try to make some changes to be able to maintain that burst.
One more from that series, which does intrigue me. And then we'll move on to some more general stuff. How big of a deal is Tybal not playing in Toronto during the season, if at all, just to catch people up? At least reportedly, he has not been vaccinated, and because of Canada's vaccination laws, he can't go to Toronto to play games that are played there.
You know, I mean, it's he's really a big deal. And, you know, my original prediction, me and Josh had talked about, was the Sixers to win game one, and then you take the Raptors to win the series after that. Actually, BetMGM actually has a prop on that now. You can get that at plus 450. And one of the reasons I was thinking that is because Thibault. I mean, Thibault is a key defensive wing for the Sixers. And this is already a thin bench. Like, they don't have a ton of guys coming off the bench. And you lose a key defensive wing in Thibault. And you look at the Raptors. They're filled with wings. Pascal Siakam, Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby. That's one guy who would be guarding one of those guys, and you don't have them. And that's huge. Now, the one thing I will say is that Thibault can't shoot, and Danny Green can. So you're going to be replacing Danny Green with Thibault. So you're not going to be able to sag off Danny Green like you would Thibault. So it kind of works both ways. I mean, I think it's tough because you've got to have bench minutes, but at the same time, they're going to improve offensively.
This next one, it kind of blows me away. The statistical models for ESPN, 538, and Basketball Reference, I don't know if you've looked at this, they all say the team with the best shot at winning the championship this year is the Celtics. The Celtics. All those models give Boston at least a 27% chance at winning it all. Phoenix is the number two team across the board with between a 19 and 26% chance, depending on where you look. Ra, are you a Boston believer? And I'm talking about not just like winning a round or two, for the championship. Do you believe in that?
Okay, when I look at my model actually makes the Celtics the best team in the league, even over the Phoenix Suns. They have the highest point differential in the league, so a lot of those models depend on point differential. The issue with the Boston Celtics right now is the fact that they chose not to actually tank on Sunday. They actually chose to go out there and beat the Memphis Grizzlies. And that put them in a really tough spot in the two seed where they're going to be playing the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Right now, they're minus 130 in that series. And, you know, minus 150 in some spots. There were actually some spots that actually opened up the Celtics as underdogs in that series. So they're going to be faced with the task of having to beat not only the Brooklyn Nets in the first round, but the Milwaukee Bucks in round two. And I did some studies on this before. One of the trends that I always talk about all the time, and I speak about it every single year, is there's a cumulative impact of playing multiple deep series. So I'll give you an example. Back in 2016, the Golden State Warriors, they played the Oklahoma City Thunder to a seven game series. And then they followed that up by playing the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. Now, when you look at who the Cleveland Cavaliers faced, they defeated the Toronto Raptors. Easy series for them. I mean, all the games were blowouts. I know they lost two games, but the Golden State Warriors found themselves in a dogfight with Oklahoma City. Like, they barely made it through. And I think that had an impact on them blowing a 3-1 lead, because you saw at the end of that series, they're dead tired against the Cavs. They had nothing left. So I actually pulled some stats. Like, I wrote this article a couple years ago. Teams that win game seven are 32 and 49. That's 39% in game one of the following series. Meaning if you blindly fade these teams that win a game seven, because they're tired and coming off a grueling series, you would hit 61%. Now, let's follow that up. Teams that win game seven, I'm going to follow it up and say teams that win game one typically win the series 70-80% of the time. So you giving away that game one kind of leads to you almost losing the series. So teams that win game seven are 34 and 46. That's 41% straight up in the following series. So with the Celtics playing these grueling series against the Nets and the Bucks, I just think it puts them in a bad spot. So even though I really like the Celtics, I just think they're in a bad spot as far as their bracket.
You have Milwaukee coming out of the East?
I think they're the favorite, but I'm not necessarily as high on Milwaukee as everybody else. I really like the Celtics. I'm going to be honest with you, because I think that the Bucks, they give up so many three-pointers right now. I think their defense isn't the same. Obviously, Giannis is the best player in the game. If the Celtics can get Time Lord back, I think they're really live, and I might find myself playing them against the Bucks should they get past the Nets.
The rumors floating around that he's coming back sooner rather than later, which I find hard to believe, but I just heard somebody talking about it this morning.
Yeah, but I mean, they still got to get past the Nets, and I just think it's just such a tough position where it's like we're looking at the Bucks probably sweeping or gentlemen sweeping the Bulls, and the Celtics or the Nets are going to be in a dogfight. So I think all that matters. So I think the Bucks are definitely the favorite.
A lot of big injury questions heading into round one. You mentioned a couple of them, but Steph hasn't played in a while. Ja will be coming back. We still don't know what's up with Luka. There are others as well. Mm-hmm. How much are you factoring injuries into what you're playing?
Oh, I mean, it's big. I think with Ja Morant, I think he's fine. He played the other day. With Steph Curry, it appears that he's a game-time decision. We haven't really gotten too much of an update on him. When it comes to Luka, I'm not expecting him to play at all. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, he's a lot younger than me. He's still in his 20s. But I know my calf injury right now, and there's different severities for calf injuries, but my calf injury still kind of has me out of commission right now. I'm starting to get 100%. I'm probably about 90% right now, but that's an injury that could last from a week to 3 months. And I'm expecting that he's going to at least miss the first two games. So I think you almost have to count the Mavericks out. And I think they know that he's the future of their franchise. They're not going to risk it. So I expect the Jazz to get through that series. We've seen that line move to about 150 to about 250 or so. So I expect them to, but I think the Warriors should be fine.
I was so ready to jump all over the Mavs against Utah, and that injury just totally rules it out pretty much. Yeah. Big picture strategy question. I personally, historically, I really like betting on a series. So I'm just throwing this out there, but I would bet Dallas to beat Utah for the series. And then I like to hedge on individual games as we go. That's a typical strategy for me. Does that specifically make sense to you? And just in general, what kind of playoff betting strategies would you recommend for our listeners heading into the playoffs?
Okay, so I gave you my biggest one in terms of, you know, fading those teams down game seven. I think that's one that nobody really has talked about. That's actually an angle that I created and researched myself. But I have like five different rules. So I like to play series as well, but one of the big things I like to do is play adjusted series prices. So a lot of times, let's say you like a team and they go down 0-1 or they go down 0-2, you can come back and get them at a better number than you would have gotten previously. So last year, one of the things that I did was I think the Clippers went down 0-2 to the Mavericks. They lost the first two games at home. I came back and took the Clippers, and I got them at plus money when they were like, you had to lay almost 2-1, 3-1 on the Clippers beforehand. So I think playing those adjusted series prices get you an edge. I also played the Bucks on the adjusted series price when they were down 3-2, knowing that they would win game six, and then I would have plus money on them in game seven. And then in game, you could find yourself ways of hedging and getting plus money on both sides. So adjusted series prices are one of the biggest things. Another thing that I like to look at is home teams down 0-2 in the series. So if you look at a team like who went down 0-2 last year, the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA Finals, they went down 0-2. When they're coming home, there's an edge on playing home teams in the first quarter in the first half. And this run has, I mean, if you look at this run, over the last 43 games, home teams down 0-2 in game three are 32-10-1. That's 76%. And a big part of that is because home court advantage in the NBA playoffs is so high. So, like, I have home court advantage at price of about 2.10 points per game this season. And the NBA playoffs last year, it was almost 6 points. So a team down 0-2 coming home, they know that this is a desperation spot. So they know they got it. Like, the crowd is rocking. They know that if they go down 0-3, the series is over. So that's a big angle that it's been so huge in NBA playoffs that the odds makers have actually adjusted for it. So one of the things you'll find is that, let's say the Nets go down 0-2 against the Celtics, right? They might be laying 5 for the game. instead of laying like 2.5 for the first half, like they normally would, they'll also be laying 5 for the first half. Because gotcha. They know the odds makers now know how much that first half edge is. So that's one. Another one is the zigzag theory, which doesn't really work as much as it used to, but that was a big one. You fade the team that won game one.
Okay.
But if you want to get more granular with the zigzag theory, this is the way you play the zigzag theory. Top three seeds coming off a game one loss.
Okay. All right.
So last year, if you look at last year, the Philadelphia 76ers, they ended up losing to – who did they lose to? The Washington Wizards in game one.
Yeah, okay. How could I forget? I feel like you need to revoke my Wizards card here. Okay, go ahead.
Here's another one. The Milwaukee Bucks, they lost – no, it wasn't – yes, the Milwaukee Bucks. They lost game one against the Hawks in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Here's another one. The Utah Jazz, they lost game one against the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
All three of those teams cover. And not only did they cover, they won by 20, 30, 40 points.
That's interesting. Is that something that you will routinely play that?
Yeah. So those top three seeds coming off a game one loss, 28-16, that's 64%.
Okay. No, I mean that's no joke. Yeah, you're making a lot of money if you can hit 64%.
Yeah, so like don't blindly play the zigzag theory, but you can play that. So you got that, you got the mid-series adjusted series prices, you got fading teams coming off of game seven, you got home teams down 0-2. I think there's two more. The biggest thing is that you want to bet openers. Always just because
as soon as openers, meaning as soon as the lines come out.
Yeah, because those lines move heavy. So you look at even last night. It didn't matter last night, but the Minnesota Timberwolves, they opened as 1.5-point favorites. They closed at 3. Right. They could have easily won that game by 3 points. And then you just don't make a profit. And then the biggest one are unders in the NBA playoffs. You can't blindly play unders, but when you look at the pace of the regular season versus the postseason, it's drastically different. So last year, the pace in the regular season was 99 possessions, in the postseason about 96. So on average, you're getting around 3 less possessions a game. You look at the unders in the last 7 seasons, 269 and 228. That's about 54%. So the unders are going to hit more often than not. Obviously, you can't blindly play those. But where you can look is game 7 unders. Mm. Obviously, game 7, these teams know each other. They've been a dogfight for 6 games. Teams are tired. Game 7 unders, 33 and 21 at 61%.
Yeah. So,
they tend to be ugly games. Like, you look at game 7 of the 2016 finals. Nobody could score for 4.5 minutes until Kyrie Irving hit the 3.
Right.
So it's like you tend to see ugly games like that. Believe it or not, game 6 unders are pretty ugly as well, too. So those are my rules right now.
Here's one from a listener, actually. Wanted me to ask you how much you weigh coaching when betting on a 7-game series. And the example that this listener gave was, are you more likely to bet on the Heat with Coach Spo, who's known for being really good at making adjustments, versus somebody like your boy Glenn, who is not?
Oh, yeah. I think coaching is everything. It's like the one place in sports where you can buy an edge and you don't have to worry about the salary cap. Look, we see it all the time. My guy's Ty Lue. But Ty Lue got out-coached last night. And you look at that game, a big part of Ty Lue's philosophy with the Clippers is playing that small ball lineup. But what happens when Karl Anthony Towns fouls out of the game and now you don't need that small ball lineup isn't effective? He didn't go back to Zubac. If he went back to Zubac, he probably kills Naz Reid with Zubac. So coaching is everything. And, we see it time and time and time again. You got to be able to pull the trigger and make the right moves. And – a lot of times my guy Glenn in Philadelphia, he hasn't been able to do that. So that's one of the reasons why I think the Toronto Raptors are a trendy underdog right now, because Nick Nurse is really, he's a guy who's going to be able to push the right buttons. And sometimes coaching just can't overwhelm, it can't overcome talent. So yeah, it's just, it's a fine line between the two.
If the Suns don't come out of the West, I think you told me you have the Warriors over the Grizzlies. Because weren't you really big?
You know what it is? I'm going to be honest with you. I don't necessarily have the Warriors over the Grizzlies. I think the Warriors are a great matchup for the Suns. I think I don't see anybody else beating the Suns, but I think the Warriors could beat the Suns.
I understand. But if the Warriors and the Grizzlies were to play, it sounds like you may give the edge to the Grizzlies.
I think the thing with the Grizzlies is that they have such athleticism, and the Warriors tend to turn the ball over a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a series where because the Grizzlies get out in transition and they score off turnovers with their defense. They're not really a great half court offense. So I think that's where they have the edge in it.
Quick one, because the regular season's wrapped up now. You have, I think, several MVP models. Who ended up finishing? I know the results, but give me the top three, because this is interesting.
Yeah, so my top three was Jokic, Giannis, and then Embiid.
Embiid was third.
Yeah, Embiid was third. And I think the big reason why is because when you look at outside of point, Jokic and Giannis, they're dominating him in every statistical category. Yeah. In the box score. I mean, rebounds, assists, field goal percentage, that's huge. Especially, I mean, because my model's a regression model. So it's comparing it against past winners. So analytically speaking, I mean, even when you look at the box score stats, they're just better than Embiid. And it's like, I love Embiid. I wish he would win. And I also think we're reaching a point now where voters aren't necessarily tied to the seeding. Like,
yeah,
I think we recognize now that Jokic isn't playing with anybody. He didn't have Jamal Murray. He didn't have Michael Porter Jr. And those teams won just three more games. And they just happened to be in a different conference. So I think Jokic is probably the MVP, but my heart says Embiid, unfortunately. But my model, like, put it Jokic, Giannis, and Embiid.
I feel so bad for Embiid, not on the MVP, because I would vote for Jokic as well if I had to vote. But he's probably not even going to make first team All-NBA, because Jokic is going to get the center spot, right?
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
That's what happened last year, yeah.
That's bad. And then the tough thing about it is so many contract incentives are tied to All-NBA, which I think it's tough. It's almost not fair.
Yeah, I feel for him, and just like everybody else, I really like, you know, watching Embiid play. So,
yeah,
who knows? Maybe your boys will make a deep run into the playoffs, and I imagine it'll be worth it for him. Yeah. All right, well, I tell you what, man, let's go ahead and bust an old favorite out, Raheem. It is now time for an NBA playoffs edition of Cash or Trash.
Okay, let's go.
Let's do it. You love this segment, don't you?
I do. I love it.
Fantastic. All right, you know the deal. I'm going to tell you a bet I like. I'll tell you why. You tell me if it is cash or trash. Here it is. This is a little different. I found it on DraftKings. It is who will have a higher points per game number in the playoffs, Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell? Either way you bet this one, it's minus 115. I really, really, really like Tatum. Here's why. First, Tatum has scored slightly more points per game than Mitchell all year. It's 26.9 points per game versus 25.9. I also really like the round one matchups for this bet. Both Boston and Utah play pretty slow. They're the 23rd and 24th teams overall in pace, but check out their round one opponents. Boston has Brooklyn. Brooklyn plays pretty fast. They are 11th in pace. Meanwhile, Utah is playing Dallas. Dallas is literally the slowest team in the league. They are last in pace, and it's not particularly close. So right off the bat, I think Tatum has more opportunities to score than Mitchell. Also, this is really more of a gut feeling thing for me than anything, but it seems to me that Tatum is making a leap this season Whereas Mitchell, though very, very good, it doesn't seem to me like he's changed all that much over the past couple of years, whereas I think Tatum has. So I could see Tatum really going big and showing everybody, hey, you need to talk about me when you talk about the KDs and Kyries of the world, who he will be going up against in round one. Whereas Mitchell, if you listen to some of the people who supposedly know things in the NBA, it sounds like people would not be surprised if he's not even in Utah next season, that, that he may want out. Danny Ainge is in charge there now. We know Danny's a wheeler and a dealer. So I just don't see this playoffs going well for Donovan. I think his numbers are going to be good. I just don't think they're going to be Tatum good. So that, my friend, is the bet. I'm taking Tatum to score more points per game during the playoffs than Donovan Mitchell. Raheem, please.
What's the prices on them?
It's minus 115 for both of them, whichever way you take it. So
I'm going to tell you why this.
Hold on. We have to do. You know how we have to do this. I'm taking Tatum minus 115 to score more points per game during the playoffs than Donovan Mitchell. I want you to give me the full explanation, but first tell me whether it's cash or trash, and give me that little pause afterwards, because you know this podcast, we still don't have theme music, but we do have like 25 different sound effects that we use, mostly when you come on the show. So give me a pause after you tell me which one this is. But Raheem, is this bet cash or trash?
This is really hard. I'm going to go cash. I'm going to ride with you. But this is tough. And I'm going to tell you why this is tough. You want to guess where Donovan Mitchell is on the all-time scoring playoff list?
Where?
These are names in front of him. Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, Kevin Durant, Jerry West.
That's true?
I'm dead serious. That's the only people who have a higher scoring average than Donovan Mitchell.
For points per game in the playoffs.
Points per game in the playoffs. He's averaged 28.8 points per game in the playoffs. And I mean, some of that is the fact that he averaged 36 points per game in the bubble and then followed it up by averaging 32 last year.
Yeah.
So Donovan Mitchell was kind of like, I mean, this is a guy who he's completely jacking in the playoffs. But the reason why I'm saying cash is because Donovan Mitchell has a tougher defense in the Mavericks. And then they're going to be playing the Suns in the second round. So they're going to be playing two tougher defenses while you have Jason Tatum. They're playing the Nets. I mean, we just saw him put up 54 points on this team. So I expect Tatum to score more than Donovan Mitchell in this first round series. And I also think the Jazz aren't going to last long. I think Tatum's going to have more opportunities to score. So I'm riding with you, but it's a tough one because Mitchell in the playoffs, he's a different animal.
That stat does really scare me. And of course, in the back of my mind, I was thinking about, I think it was the bubble run, right? That was when they played the Nuggets and him and Murray just went off like every single game. So I'm scared, but this is, I will say this is more, I think Tatum is going to explode this postseason than I think Mitchell is going to crumble.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Like, I think you're buying Tatum stock low right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a great way of putting it. And I get so excited even just talking about this stuff, Raheem. I'm going to have 25 of these stupid, weird plays going into the playoffs. I love it. I can't get enough of this stuff. So that was fantastic. All right, cash trash. First time we've done that in a while. I want to make sure that we aren't rushed for story time with Raheem. But,
this story is good. I cannot believe I didn't tell you this story.
I'm excited about it too. Hold on. And I teased it in the intro too, because the text messages you sent me were just fantastic. I only get text messages like that from you, Rob. But okay, real quick before we get to that one, big fight this weekend. Spence Ugas, our listeners know that you're a big boxing guy, in addition to everything else. Three welterweight titles on the line for this one. Spence, you know, top 10 guy, I think, pound for pound. Ugas beat Manny Pacquiao in his last fight. Spence, according to FanDuel, -550 to win. It's a pretty heavy favorite. Ugas +360. Yeah. Do you like any bets with this one?
Oh, yeah, I really like a bet with this one. I like Errol Spence to win by decision. I think you can get that at -150 right now. Believe it or not, Errol Spence actually hasn't knocked anybody out since 2018. We're in 2020 right now. This is a guy who's been fighting in the same weight class for, I mean, he's been fighting in the same weight class for like 10 years now. And a lot of times what you see is that boxers need to kind of move up. I mean, we all gain weight as we go and grow older. I know I've gained some weight. At some point, you got to move up to the next weight class, or otherwise you're starving your body. I mean, Spence is a guy who kind of blows up in between fights, and with him blowing up and then having to constantly cut, that's a problem as far as being able to get these knockouts. So he didn't stop Sean Porter. He didn't stop Danny Garcia. He didn't stop Mikey Garcia. I mean, so, and then also this is a guy who also suffered a devastating car accident. And when you suffer a car accident like that, then you had, you know, surgery on his eye. He's fighting a slick boxer in Ugas. Like, Ugas is, I mean, this is a guy who's really slick, and I mean, he can make you miss. So I think this one goes the distance. I mean, if you want to play it to go to distance, I think you can get it at minus 200. But I think Spence wins this one by decision, minus 150. I would take both of those bets. I'm hoping the next fight is Terrence Crawford, but my hopes aren't up right now. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the fight we need to see.
Is it worth me, a casual boxing fan, paying for this fight? Because I'm sure it's like $75 or whatever. Parrish says yes.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't pay for a lot of fights unless I go. I'm kind of a streaming guy, but yeah, pay for it and support them.
Really? Okay. I thought you were going to tell me to like put it on Phoenix or something. All right. Last thing, take as long as you want, man. It's everybody's favorite part of you coming on the pod. Story time with Raheem. What do you got?
Okay. 2019. I had just left Roc Nation. About 2 weeks after I left Roc Nation, I'm betting full time. It's a Thursday night TNT matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. I go drive over to Sugar House Casino. I'm excited. I think I wanted to lay 5 points with the Milwaukee Bucks. Line might have been 4.5. I think it was 5. But I told myself, look, I'm going to bet this game and I'm going to go home. And for whatever reason, I get there. I think it's about 6:55. Game starts at 7:10. I'm like, let me watch the first quarter, see what happens. So I put my bet in, I watched the first quarter, and 2 minutes into the game, Eric Bledsoe gets ejected for throwing the ball at Joel Embiid. I'm pretty sure you've seen the highlights of this. I mean, he beams the ball at him. And I'm like, oh my God. And at the time, mind you, there's no mobile betting at the time. You can't bet on your phone. You have to go to the casino because sports betting had just become legalized. So there's no mobile betting. You can't. Unless you're betting with the offshore bookie or you're betting like illegally on a computer, there's no mobile betting. So you only can bet at the casino. So I'm like, I got to stay here and hedge this because Eric Bledsoe is their point guard. He's the catalyst for, you know, moving everything around. And I may lose this bet. So I have to stay until halftime or to bet this live. So I end up staying, watching the game. The Milwaukee Bucks are down at halftime. And I'm like, I think the Bucks are going to win this game. So I add more on to the Bucks. And I basically got them at even money to win the game. So the game goes into overtime. And I'm staying far later than I wanted to stay. I mean, I got there around 6-something. It's almost 10 o'clock. Game goes into overtime. The Bucks end up winning. I hit both bets. I'm excited. I can go home. I can go to sleep. I walk outside. Somebody, shouts to my guy, Tweety Dom. He's a handicapper on Twitter. Tweety Dom's one of my good friends. He says, I hope you didn't park back there, and points to the back of the park lot. I'm sitting there like, oh my God, I did. When I look at the back of the parking lot, the whole parking lot's on fire. Like the entire parking lot's on fire.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, I walk back to the parking lot and somebody comes up to me and says, is that you with the gold Lexus? I'm like, yeah, it's me with the gold Lexus. He's like, your car is done. So it turns out somebody's car was on fire and they pulled into the parking lot and parked right next to me. Their car exploded and burnt 10 other cars. Oh. And he just happened to park next to me.
Oh my God. Do you know when he parked next to you? Because you were like, you're planning on leaving.
It had to happen in the last hour, because the fire department was out there. Like, a lot of times when you get into a car accident, they have these guys called wreck chasers. So basically, they're looking for accidents so they can tow your car. A guy with a tow truck just came up to me. He was like, yo, I got you. I'm going to tow your car. I'm going to take you home. Here's your information. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, it was bonkers, because I planned on just being in and out. Yeah. I ended up staying later, and then I ended up having to get a new car. And it was crazy, because this is how the universe works. I kept saying, I'm getting a new car this year. I don't know why. I just was like, I'm going to buy a new car this year. I had no plans of buying a new car. And then that happens. And the universe forced me to buy a new car. And the crazy thing about it was that his insurance company didn't cover it. Like, they really? Said it was, yeah, they said it was an accident. It wasn't his fault.
So did your insurance company?
Yeah, my insurance, they gave me a little something. So I basically ended up just buying a new car in cash with a little bit of the money that they gave me. But it was just like, it was the craziest thing. And it's actually, if you guys Google Sugar House Philadelphia Casino parking lot, it's on the news. Like, there's like three different news stations that cover it. Josh, I'll send you the link.
Please do. Unreal. Did you talk to any of the news crews? Was there anybody there asking you to make a comment?
Nah, I just remember talking to police and talking to the tow truck drivers. And we were out there for hours because they had to do an investigation. And I just went back in the casino. I think the Warriors were on. And I was there for about probably like 3 a.m. It was ridiculous. And all I could do was just laugh, because it was just so ridiculous. Like, what are the chances that somebody, like, you go to the casino, you plan on leaving, you don't leave, and then the guy parks right next to you. Like, he literally parked right next to me, and then his car explodes.
When you sent me the text and you were like, have I told you the story about when my car exploded at the casino? I was in my head, the mental picture I got was like Bob De Niro in Casino. Like, you know what I mean? That was Casino, right? Yeah. Well, I'm glad that wasn't the case. And man, Raheem, you never disappoint, my friend. you never, ever disappoint.
All I could do was laugh. I mean, it was one of those situations, and I felt bad because, I mean, I guess I was in a privileged position, you know, having insurance to where they would cover it. But, I mean, if you got liability, you're in a situation to where it's just like, damn, you just out of your car, and there's nothing you could do. I mean, maybe you could sue the casino, but I mean, I was in a privileged position to where I was able to just go out and get a new car and be fine. But there were some people who weren't in that position, and I feel for them. But all I could do at the time was just laugh, because it was just so absurd.
What model Lexus was it?
It was an ES.
ES, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I just bought an updated ES after that. I mean, like, the thing I love about the ES is that it's basically a Toyota Camry, so you get the reliability.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, you get a little bit of luxury to it. So
I've always been a big LS fan. It's kind of like classic, whatever. Yeah, anyway,
I'm
like LS
too. I'll probably get one of those soon.
I'm sure you will. Everything I have for you, my man, this is awesome. Where can listeners find you? What do you have coming down the pike? You know, plug away.
I mean, you can check me out at actionnetwork.com. I mean, I'm in the New York Post right now. They post my picks a couple times a week. I'm going to be in the Philadelphia Inquirer. We just worked out a deal with them.
Yeah.
I actually just got promoted at my job. I got promoted to senior writer. They moved me over to the Better Collective umbrella. So I'm going to be working with Better Collective and Action. And the Better Collective, they're the one who has to deal with the Inquirer. So I'm going to be working with that. But I'm still at Action. You can still find my podcast on the Action Network feed. You can find me on the Buckets feed. For the Action Network, that's for the NBA playoffs. We have podcasts every single day with my colleagues Matt Moore, Brandon Anderson. But yeah, we're just working. Got a lot of game guides. Just closing out this NBA season strong.
congratulations on your continued success, my man. By the way, Philly Inquirer is Ra's hometown paper, which is very, very cool. Not that you need to hear this from me, but keep getting after it, man. None of this surprises me one iota. So as always, thank you so much. This was great. And until next time, go get them in the playoffs.
All right, no doubt. You have a good one. Also, yeah, check me out on Twitter and Instagram. I am Rostradamus.
I am Rostradamus. There it is. Until next time, Rostradamus, take it easy, man.
All right, cool. You have a good one.
How good was that? I could not be more excited for the NBA playoffs. And as always, thank you to Raheem. Let's see. This week, we came out on a Thursday. I tweeted about it. I put it on the Rambling and Gambling IG. I had to be in the newsroom when we normally record this. We normally record it on a Tuesday, so that's why I'm recording this episode on a Wednesday. It's going to be released on a Thursday. Next week, however, we'll be back to our normal schedule, so you can expect us back next week, bright and early Wednesday morning. Will be a good one. To be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure what we're doing yet, but it'll be a good one. I can promise you that. Thank you for rating, subscribing, reviewing, IG at Rambling and Gambling, email Rambling and Gambling Podcast at gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.